Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
A composite show, archive segments from previous episodes that got cut due to time. Recorded for episode 222 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Mad Jin, and Lord Tyrion. So this is by McClimes. One thing that's always bugged me in Civ is the way victory conditions are so all or nothing. Once everyone is buying my blue jeans, no one else can be elected world leader or into space. So here's my idea how to alter it. It is a Civilization VI idea, victories and coalitions. So the first part is we get rid of the World Congress completely.
Yay!
Reuse that mechanic. Coalitions! Not every nation must be a member of a coalition, and there can be multiple coalitions existing at once. No nation can be a member of more than one coalition. Coalitions would function exactly like the World Congress, but only in regards to their member nations. There would also be a few new resolutions to propose pass, as well as some modifications to existing ones. To me, the biggest issue with the World Congress and the United Nations and then from civilization before that is, guess what? Everybody's in it once it's founded. And you're forced in it. You got to stay in it.
Yep.
It's always been incongruous with the rest of the game mechanics.
Yeah, especially when they do something like ban luxury and you can't tell them to F off.
Yeah.
At least in Civ 4, you could defy the resolution. It gave you an
happiness. And even in Alpha Centauri, there was a global council type thing. And if you didn't agree with their decisions, you could say, well, screw that. I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah. And that's more like the real world. Just because the UN passes something doesn't mean that any country has bothered to pass it.
Yeah, if you want to be part of a coalition where it's do as we say, not as we do, then sure, go for it.
Yep.
So, yes, you've got free passage, that's open borders. Defensive treaty, that's a defensive pact. Declare war is declare war.
What?
Entire coalition declares war. I know, crazy, right? Then we have official ideology and official religion, and they sound similar, but as proposed, they're actually not. Because an official religion, that religion spreads 5 times strength amongst coalition members, and all other religions are half as effective, and the Holy City give its owner a few extra votes in the coalition. Although I guess that would assume that the person who holds the Holy City would be in the coalition. But then official ideology, all members of the coalition must convert to the chosen ideology or be kicked out of the coalition.
Ow.
Meh. I would assume that the diplo relations between people of different ideologies would be sufficient that you wouldn't get in the coalition in the first place if you were a different ideology.
Unless it's an ancient era coalition.
Yeah.
Well, there are some people that suggest coalitions should not be allowed at the beginning of the game, but something that comes about as of ideology founding. I wonder if we're really treating a symptom as opposed to a cause when we do that.
I think his whole thrust really is to bring back the ability to have treaties, the ability to have not necessarily coalitions per se, but alliances.
This looks like a much better fleshed out concept of the Civ 4 permanent alliance setup, where you could have more than just two people sharing a victory depending on the game. And while the tuning looks awful to me, I don't think it's a bad idea. The only caveat is, since this is a proposal for Civ 6, we have no idea what the mechanics of Civ 6 will be like. Like, there's no guarantee that there'll be such a thing as an ideology in Civ 6. There might be, but there might not be.
Yeah.
But I don't mind this. I like this as a concept, actually.
Yeah, though actually one of the nicer things I like in the coalition side of things is that declare war is a vote. So unlike in Beyond Earth, where you, hey, you guys want to ally? Okay, let's ally. Oh, guess what? Declare war. You're all at war now, suckers. Defensive treaty as a separate thing for offense, like switching offense and defense. So you can have a coalition that's for trade or one for defense and or offense. That's all good.
The one that really raised my eyebrows, although definitely the ideology-related eyebrows, shared discoveries. When researching a new technology, a member only needs one-third of the normal science. If another member of that coalition already has that technology, I am on board with this.
I'll be over here with my one city, and I will coalition with all the major civs and let them do all the research.
No, that's not balanced.
I'll be like, let's see. Hey, Korea.
Or you could just spam cities.
Hey, Babylon.
And let other people do all the researching for you, and then you know, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Hey, Korea.
I worry
hey,
about
Babylon.
That stuff. Would have to be changed.
I gotta say, that the reactions to shared discoveries is interesting to me, because even with the strength of that proposal as it stands, it is still weaker than tech trade abuse in Civ 4.
Oh,
like, we've come a long way.
Yes.
We've come a long way when there are strong reactions to shared discoveries making a tech cost a third of the science. But that's really interesting to me, the community has shifted to that extent.
That's the thing. I mean, even if you think reality... Say shared discoveries. The U.S. has a lot of military-industrial complex stuff. They make a new toy. They don't give that tech blueprint style to every member of NATO. They won't. They will sell them, and the selling of those arms usually comes with caveats, as in you can't use them in this style or resell it. But shared in the respect of, we have this new tech, we'll come build it or sell it to you. Or in the case of a building or some other thing, I'll come build it in your territory if you let me have the money. That makes sense, but there's no, here's the blueprint for this new shiny weapon.
Well, no, and they're not getting the tech instantly either. I mean, the one-third might be a bit much, but it makes sense that there's some. I mean, the fact that someone else knows a tech should make it cheaper. I mean, if you're going to go with realism, although Civ 5 doesn't really go for much realism. But
thinking back to Civ 4 internet.
Well, not like that, but I mean, just it's easier for, say, a country that doesn't know too much about, say, making televisions now to make televisions than it would have been 100 years
ago.
That's
because the company in the place that does know how to make televisions went and built a manufacturing base over
that's
in that
true.
Other country. That's
but
why.
There's no reason that couldn't happen in game except for military techs, which you're trying to protect the secrets. But not all techs in the games are... really necessarily military techs on every instance.
No,
build a manufactory in someone else's country, and yeah, I mean, they'd be able to look at that and be like, hey, we could build factories too. You do have more access to technology with nations that are friendly to you, working with you, fighting alongside you than you would otherwise. We're more likely to swap stuff with allies. I guess my point is their discount is strong, but it's not a bad idea within the framework of this concept.
I'd say two-thirds at that point.
Well, that's why this is good, that this is a Civilization 6 proposal, as opposed to let's figure out a way to mod, say, Civilization 5 to do this. Because then all those things that are under the hood, you can talk about that as well, and then what the implications are.
And throw out all the bad ideas that are under the hood already.
Space colonization. While active, any spaceship parts built by members of the coalition are pooled together to create a shared spaceship.
Hmm.
When the ship launches, this resolution is voided. To build another shared ship, the resolution must be passed again. I assume that means to build another shared ship part. The current leader of the coalition is considered, for victory purposes, to be the one who launched the ship.
So you better be the leader of the coalition if you want to win.
Yeah.
And the thing is, this is what confused some people, because later on he clarified saying, oh, no. If the coalition wins, then it's a shared victory. But then when you do tell us that the current leader of the coalition is considered for victory purposes, that led to people saying, wait a minute, so the current leader of the coalition then is the one that's going to win if, while they are the leader, the coalition gets two, and this is where the second part of it comes in, victory points.
Since it's not an end game, finish the spaceship and win thing, that's actually not so bad. But then again, I think most people would prefer some sort of mid-step in there, like shared space parts for International Space Station, colony on Mars, or something like that, where you do all share before being able to create that giant spaceship that goes out of the planetary system.
Now, what actually caught my attention more about this was the victory points initially, just because of how much we love the current scoring in the Civilization franchise.
Whee!
Whee. I read the coalition part afterwards, even though we talked about coalitions first. When doing the math, okay, he talks about fractional victory points are rounded down, but that's the whole thing. Victory points. And he does say, these are loose numbers. I doubt it is balanced at all. This is just to give a vague example. And I would say as a side, it's true we're not really going to know if it's going to be balanced until you actually test it. But when you see some of the numbers, whether it's an absolute number or a relative number, you have to question even before you test it, which kind of gets to this shared discoveries thing that we were getting to before. Population. Every point of population is worth one. Victory point. Meh. Tourism. You get a percentage of the population points of all other civs based on your cultural influence with them at 1/5 the value. So, Mongolia has 100 population. You are 20% influential with them. So you would have +4 victory points based on your tourism with Mongolia. Space. When a successful space colonization launch is achieved, that civilization gets 30 victory points. Multiple space launches can be achieved even by the same civilization. So when I read that civilization gets 30 victory points, so that's who the current leader of the coalition is for victory purposes, because they're the one who launched the spaceship.
Yeah.
Technology. Every technology researched is worth 3 victory points. Oh, you mean like looking at the literacy percentage and the demographics and of kind of like, what's going on here? I'm farther down in the technology tree than you are down this path. Oh, that's because I went and I backfilled a whole bunch of cheaper technologies. Economics. Every 10 gold in your income, not stored cash, I'm glad this was included.
Not stored cash.
It comes to the AI, is worth 1 victory point. So, for example, if you are at +22 gold, you gain 2 victory points. I'm thinking, wow, trade routes as if they weren't already important become even more important. And also, can I be Venice? They get the extra trade routes.
Mm-hmm. Although, if you had this type of tuning, then the pop would wreck you.
Yeah. I think his point is that somebody who is highly economic should be able to gain points versus somebody who is highly conquesting, aggressive, or massive tourism-ish. Whatever. He's trying to throw some ability to play in different styles, which is fine, except that some of them obviously are just going to be taken by everybody.
Yes. Then conquest. If one of your cities was founded by a different civilization than your own, its population is worth 25% more victory points. So a conquered city of 10 population is worth 12 victory points instead of the normal 10 victory points, as opposed to a city of 10 population that you founded.
Imagine. Yes. I will sell you a city. Will you sell me a city?
Okay. Awesome. No coalition, man.
This bonus does not apply if the original founder is a member of the same coalition as you.
Oh.
And seeing as how you can only be in one coalition at the time, as was described here.
I would let people be members of multiple coalitions. I would just actually switch the word coalition for treaty organizations. And I would let people be part of multiple treaty
organizations. That convolutes the victory, though.
Except that you would have to modify some of the other stuff. But there's different types of treaty organizations. Like, you could just, say, make an economic one.
So then the options that you have within that coalition, if it was an economic coalition, would not be the same necessarily as the options you would have with other coalitions.
Yes. But I would say there'd be only one defensive treaty / war treaty type coalition that you're allowed to join. But say you could be part of multiple economic ones, maybe multiple scientific or tourism cultural ones, whatever.
Probably just even simplify it to just saying there are X amount of coalitions of X type and you can join one of each type. Because if you can join too many economic ones, you lose sort of a block play you create, because while it's realistic to have multiple coalitions, you also want the coalitions to go up against each other. If people are just sort of bunched up in lots of economic coalitions, you don't get any of that gameplay element, at least.
Yeah, but then you would have certain points where, like, the East versus West and different coalitions like that even just thinking current economic treaties, where, you know, you'd have, like, the European Free Trade Zone and the U.S. Free Trade Zone, and then you'd have a country like Canada being part of each. And therefore, both of those blocks would be able to funnel money into through Canada to get into the other block, but they can't go direct. So possible that the founder of the economic one has to have issues or something. I mean, there's ways to rewrite that all in there to make sure that there is blocks and that the people in Poland are minimal.
It says, where this gets fun is that the coalitions combine their victory points. So if a coalition has 3 members and they each have 40 victory points, the coalition's victory point total is 120. Okay. So the game is won when you or the coalition you are a member of account for 70% of all total victory points accumulated worldwide. And my favorite comment was pointing out from Question Time, wouldn't the first person to get a single victory point instantly win the game due to having 100% of the victory points?
Yes.
So then McClime says, I suppose you'd have to build in a buffer at first. No, there's no supposing.
All you would need is just a minimum amount that you need to win so that you can't win with like 5 points or 1 point or something. Like you have to have at least 100 or 200 or whatever you need to make the game last a decent amount of time.
If you get 10 points and then you mass nuke your enemies to the point where they have nothing left, I win!
Well, to be fair, that you kind of have one if you do that, yeah. Though. Like, they're not going to stop you from walking into your city, so I mean, it's just a formality.
It does say in response, yes, like 70% of the points and at least 10 victory points. Once again, I think his absolute number of at least 10 points is a little on the low side, but
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, especially economic, because every 10 gold in your income is worth one. Is that per turn?
Yes.
Yeah, so all you have to do is get 100 income, which seems really easy by mid-game, or 10 pop capital.
Well, you would need more than that, though, because they'd have some pop, so they would also be having some victory points.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess also what's kind of on my mind is if you can have as many coalitions you want, is that you're just going to have a bit of bloat, because endgame Civ can get sometimes a bit messy just in terms of how many things you have to organize. And if you have 9 coalitions you're part of, it's going to be a bit unwieldy.
I think there also needs to be diplomatic implications. If you try to get yourself into multiple economic coalitions and then you happen to decide, hey, I want to get into this defensive coalition, or even to stay in a coalition or relationships otherwise with another nation, it could be fine if you want to try to balance all of these coalitions and keeping the members happy in order to get into and then stay in the coalition, then fine. You can go ahead and you can take that time. But yeah, you just don't want it to be, if I'm in 2 economic coalitions, that's better than 1 because more is better. There needs to be some kind of limiter to getting in and then staying in as well.
Yeah, and if you do have that sort of thing, then you can go for economic warfare, where one economic coalition declares economic war on the other by basically saying we won't trade with that other coalition. And then if you are somebody that's in the middle of the two, you'll have to make a choice about which one to stick in or get kicked out of both. So there are probably ways to help weed out people who are trying to be in everything and make it easy.
And it also makes the game a little more fluid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in this economic coalition at turn 10, and then regardless of what I do or don't do afterwards, I'm still in it 100 turns later. Not necessarily what you do or don't do, and when you do something or don't do something, especially like when a vote comes up, you know, if something passes, but you're the only one that said no, and I'm not going to start talking about numbers or anything like that, because that gets into more imbalance, but just as an idea, that the other nations, they remember that.
Yeah.
They take that into account.
It could be diplomacy, or it could be vote-based. You have to stay diplomatically positive with all of the civs in the coalitions, else you might get kicked out.
That could actually work with victory points as well, that your votes are based on your victory points, so if you just try to tag along and just not going to have any say at some point, so somebody else can just decide to kick you out because he contributes more points and has more votes.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't have good relations with that person, they can get other people to want to kick you out too.
Or if you are in multiple coalitions, maybe your victory points in the coalitions is divided by the number. I mean, maybe you're allowed 2 or 3 before that kicks in, but then after that.
Yeah, it depends on the type. Like if you're trying to play off all the, say, economic related ones, then yeah, your ability to influence all of them pretty much goes down to nothing. Whereas if you're the leader of one, then you'd have a lot more say. That would make sense. But yeah, I would say that only one defensive treaty type group at a time.
You can't be in both NATO and the Soviet bloc.
But you can probably still have these. You can have somebody in his coalition and then have a defensive pact with somebody else. And
then
you can still trigger weird coalitions going crazy at some point.
Yeah, or a war within a coalition because defensive pacts. half the people in the coalition are defending somebody else who's not part of the coalition yet.
And then that could result maybe in a coalition disintegrating and then breaking off into 2.
Yeah.
Where you have to kind of make a choice.
Yeah.
Are you trying to give the EU4 guys ideas?
Well, it's actually interesting you say that. I know EU4 was brought up earlier because in the thread, Cephalophobe talked about maybe allow smaller coalitions to be subsumed into larger ones or larger coalitions to split up or gain substructure, i.e. the Eurozone in the EU. I really like the idea of coalitions, but I think it'd be cool if they were more fluid towards the beginning. Yes, 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 yes. But then EU4 actually came up. General Joss says, it really does sound like you should give Europa Universalis 4 a whirl. Because some people said, you are trying to make this to be more of a simulator than a 4X game. You should go play EU and keep this out of Civ. And I'm thinking, well, you don't just take what's in EU and go copy-paste. That doesn't mean that you can't have an idea of coalition.
And the coalition in this is nothing like coalitions in EU. The only association is the word itself.
And
this
even that
we'd
rather
switch.
Nothing to
do with EU coalitions at all. Let's make that very clear.
Yeah. And even then, I would probably put it more like treaty organization or something like that.
Yeah.
Block. Or give
well,
you
it's
a couple...
closer to what this proposal is. It's
yeah.
More so than a coalition, yes. It's more like a treaty organization. But and it's definitely not a proposal based on a concept from EU4. There's no.
No, it's not.
And it is okay for strategy games to borrow concepts from each other's
absolutely.
Type of game, as long as it's not a direct copy and slapped into something like if EU4 brought in Trade Route from Civ, that would be weird.
Yeah.
Because it just wouldn't work that way.
I think it would not work in the literal sense before it would before we talk about anything else, but yes.
As a mechanic style.
Yeah.
In the thread, 19683DW says, for me, I'm trying to bring my people to dominance over every other culture in the world, either literally, scientifically, culturally, or diplomatically. The alternative of sharing success, like through a coalition, seems rather disappointing and wouldn't feel as significant. The coalition in real life still allow peoples to succeed independently, so that should be fine. It's kind of one of those things where, well, sure, if you're able to go it alone, then you could certainly make that choice. And by the way, there's nothing to say, I am going to be in this coalition to prop myself up, and then at a certain point, I and them going to leave, and then for that last push, win it alone. Someone also made this suggestion. They said, this sounds kind of odd in single player. Why would you want to share a victory with an AI? It makes it more hollow. It doesn't seem real. It's not as cut and dry.
What?
And okay, now we're getting into a personal preference sort of thing. But it's not a permanent alliance.
Nope.
It's not like you've locked yourself in from now until the end of the game. So I'm glad we used a term like coalition and not an alliance, even though strictly speaking, there's not one example of coalition or one example of alliance. But given that we've already used the term alliance in the Civilization series, I like how this is different. Like we were saying, even though the suggestion said not be a member of more than one coalition, and I assume he meant not more than one member of one coalition at a time. So I think even in his suggestion, you could be in coalition A and then go to coalition B, have different types of coalitions, and maybe you're in some, or heck, maybe you're in none of them at all. Just like, I mean, I don't know why you would do this, but you can kind of pretty well ignore religion entirely, for example, in Civilization V. And when I say entirely, there's probably the likelihood that someone's religion is going to spread to you eventually, but you don't have to engage in it, just like you wouldn't have to engage in a coalition, and maybe sometimes that's an advantage. It shouldn't always be you must absolutely join a coalition every game.
But I would just assume that if you're in a coalition with others, then your tourism and other stuff will spread to them better than if you weren't. So
I would like to see some disincentive to being a tool bag and just leaving the coalition and blowing up your former allies, though.
Yeah.
I feel like if you want to solo everybody, you should either just not join the coalition in the first place, or you have some penalty or disincentive to just turning on your allies. Not that you
like
can't do it, you absolutely should be able to do it for fun, but there should not be incentive to give up on a shared victory just to screw your partners, basically.
I suppose that's with a shared with a victory points anyway, because if it breaks up, how are victory points going to be shared? Probably going to be split up between everybody who was in a coalition before. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Because you can't have everybody keep the victory points when they leave.
Yeah, or all those victory points get thrown out. If, say, somebody blows up the coalition, coalition-based victory points just get thrown out the window. Doesn't exist anymore. Therefore, it's not providing victory. So you can have a, say, medieval-era coalition did a bunch of stuff, but it stopped being useful, so it got thrown out. So why would it be influential to the end of the game when it doesn't exist anymore?
And that actually goes to the sentiment in the thread, which was, this sounds like the game's going to end too early. Oh, well, I think our coalition's going to win here on turn 50. No, we can't have that. I'm going to break it up, and then the game can go longer. You're welcome. Jeez.
I don't think it would be problematic to tune a game such that that wouldn't happen, especially if you're building Civ 6 with this kind of thing in mind.
Yeah, you'd probably say something like coalition victory can't exist until after the modern era.
Unless you just conquer everyone else.
Well, if everybody's dead,
that should always be in play.
Yeah.
That's always an option.
Except yourself, of course.
Yeah. I'm fine with the sort of concept of all the city-states will band together into a treaty organization that could become sort of a world congressy thing, and then the major civs would have to, like, convince the city-states to let them in.
And city-states
won a conquest victory.
And I was going to say, city-states all join a coalition together, and they say, hey, there's this guy that keeps bullying us. Can you do something about it? If you do, we'll join your coalition if you declare war on them.
Yeah. And then because we're playing a co-op game, I'm not actually going to attack him, but I'll declare war on him.
But it would make sense.
It would.
Even city-states, like all the city-states around Civ X, join a coalition against them or join a treaty around them. And then, while they might all individually be pretty useless when they're together.
Well, if it's all the ones on Dan's continent, he's probably going to go, oh, that's cute, and squish them all.
Or they'll squish
him
back.
Not denying it.
Or they'll squish him back.
That's why if the city-states could band together and then get another civilization to declare war and then actually do something about it, and not just say, okay, we'll air quotes declare war, but it ends up being a cold war. You know, they don't actually do anything in terms of taking land or anything like that. But if there could be an actual effect of, you know, if I bully states these cities too much, not only are they going to gang up on me, but they're going to get themselves an ally and they're going to come rolling in, it'd make you think twice.
Yeah.
We've gone from the original suggestion, talking about the specifics, the values of it, why that's good or bad, and then talking about it in more general terms, and now talking about stuff that actually didn't even come up in the thread, other than someone mentioned city-states, and the person who started this thread went, oh, I just get rid of city-states anyway, I don't like that mechanic. Well, you know, I mean, that's one choice, I suppose, but it doesn't preclude the fact city-states being in a Civilization VI with this.
Yeah, and actually city-states would work with this little treaty organization coalition thing better than some of the other stuff, because then you have small people getting together to go after the big guys rather than all the big guys getting together.
Yeah, 19683DW did say, I like the current setup of solid goals where victories aren't shared and small, weaker nations can still win single-handedly by surprise.
No.
Well,
no. If you're small and you're weak, you should lose.
What would make more sense, actually, is if you were a smaller, weaker nation and ended up being the quote-unquote weakest link in a larger or a decent coalition, seeing as how it would be a shared victory, potentially regardless of what you do or don't do or when you do it or don't do it, you could still win because it would be a shared victory. You would still have to contribute in some way in order to stay in that coalition, but that would actually be a way to say, ah, oh, that smaller, weaker nation, man, they played their diplomatic cards well. They weren't the strongest militaristically, but they really had a powerful economy, so they used that to help their fellow coalition members and stay in there, rather than, how the heck did you just pull off a diplomatic victory? You're nothing. Oh, wait, you went and got all those city-state allies in the last few turns, you bugger.
Apostolic palace. Oh,
Oh, geez, no. No, Phil.
Yeah, obviously we have to prevent abuse.
19683DW is an implication that if you put this in the system, okay, they couldn't win single-handedly, but they could actually still win.
Yeah.
And if you saw that a smaller, weaker nation was part of a larger coalition, they didn't just win by themselves. You could say, no, that was smart. I wish I'd thought of that because I was ahead of them, but I didn't play my cards as well. And so then they ended up being on the winning team as opposed to the victor outright, which would then be, what are you talking about?
And what's wrong with a shared victory by a small nation? They'll get a bad score or whatever, but man, there's nothing wrong with that conceptually.
Well, if a bunch of small nations got together and had a shared victory, then that'd be okay. But
that'd
be
even more impressive.
But the super small nation that never really did anything, mechanics shouldn't allow, just in general.
Okay, I mean, you can quote-unquote win a game like that, but what meaning does that have, really?
Yeah.
I don't see why that matters. If you get your jollies by quote-unquote winning while sitting there as an OPM and then joining into a coalition and that, and like just, you know, happening to be on the winning side, I mean, I guess. What's wrong with that? If you find that enjoyable, go ahead, win.
Yeah, I just don't want it to be a path to this is how I won and then have like a billion I beat Deity because I joined a coalition at the last minute.
Oh, come on. From another angle, I think this also can help with the guess what, there's that runaway AI, especially on that other continent. Well, I guess they're going to steamroll to victory because they're that much farther ahead in this, that, and the other thing. But once the other nations of the world know that you exist, for instance, which kind of ties back to at a certain point, you can then have coalitions. It's not just from the very beginning. It's, say, see that guy over there? He's got science, land, production, military. But guess what? If we compile all of our resources together, then we as a coalition can be just as, if not more powerful than that person. And now maybe we're not going to be so inclined to rage quit.
I don't think you'll ever stop rage quit.
No, but I think it's one of those, what am I supposed to do now? They went and conquered their continent before I ever met them. Look how much farther ahead they are. What the heck am I supposed to do now? And this also ties into victory. Okay, I guess I'm not going to go down that victory path. I'm going to go and switch to a different kind. And we know that, for example, with the culture of victory, with subsequent expansion packs, that it's easier to change midstream what you're doing without reloading old saves. Ho, ho, ho. But at the same time, it also gives you another path and another choice that is practical within game and makes sense within the mechanics, which is, okay, maybe you're going to have to play a little bit more diplomatic game. Maybe you're going to have to bide your time a little bit here. But it's not, I'm screwed. And from the other side, well, I completely conquered my continent. I haven't met anybody else. It's turn 50 or 60. I'm just going to steamroll to victory now. It's just a matter of rolling over the turns. Nope, not necessarily. You could find a whole bunch of other people that decide they want to get rid of you. And then what they do after they get rid of you, maybe their coalition breaks up now that you're destroyed. But then, hey, that's their problem.
I really like that.
I would say you have to change the AI to realize global threats versus local, because otherwise they would also go, well, maybe my fastest way to dealing with that person over there is to just kill you rather than playing nice with you. And then you have the same old problem.
Yeah, but if it was changed like that, that would actually be a really nice catch-up mechanic, because that's one thing about civilization, that sometimes you just get to a point where you can't win or you always win, and it's nice to just have a catch-up mechanic that's just not so artificial by boosting the lower scores or putting in inflation or something to punish what's ahead, but actually make it like really a gameplay mechanic.
Getting to what I was getting at as well, which is,
yeah,
there's not this either lull or this, well, it's all but a guarantee unless somebody does something stupid or something does something extraordinary. There's this mechanic that comes in that can help level the playing field. It's not like starting at turn zero again. It's not like you reset everything, but it's just a shift in terms of your thinking, in terms of diplomacy, production, science, land, military, culture, all of these aspects that also speak to the victory conditions, or in this case, victory points, where the points are the condition.
I just like that it feels more natural than having a sort of rule that just says, oh yeah, you can't do that anymore. We just give technologies to somebody so they catch up, especially with lower AIs.
I don't know what else there is to say other than let's get a prototype of this done. We'll talk on the next episode. We'll test it.
Oh, yeah. We have spent a lot of time on that topic, and it's something, at least in concept, that we all seem to like, which is not always the case with research lab topics.
Hey, guess what? We're going to talk about a suggestion, and we're going to talk about how we like it more than not. Well, that's not interesting. You guys hate everything.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Not true. We just hate that you think that. Wait, no one?
Exactly.
Recorded for episode 225 with Dan Q, the Me and Team, Matt Jin, Alpha Shard, and Dino Yoshi 13.
Posted by Daft, titled Tech Preferences and Research Cost Differences for Each Civ. If the designers choose to take the more historical path, each tech research could take or cost each civ more or less time to complete depending on each civ's preferences. Accordingly, somewhat to history, Mayas could take much less time studying agriculture and masonry than the Hun. On the other hand, it could take Huns a lot less time to develop archery and animal domestication, husbandry, than it would take the Mayans. What they mean is a preset amount of science points needed for different civs to discover a particular advancement.
I prefer Boris Goodenough's response, which is essentially, let's have it be more situational to the game circumstance, or as opposed to the civilization that you choose from the outset.
Yes.
We already have the idea of uniques, like unique ability, unique unit, unique building, unique improvement. Okay, so that is based on the civilization that you chose at the outset. But like he says, for example, if my first two cities are both on the coast, researching seafaring or something comparable should be much easier than if all my initial cities are in the middle of the desert.
Yep.
Because that would also then tie into realism, right? Because if you're not along the coast, you're probably not interested in making boats that go on water.
I got a boat in the desert.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
Desert boats.
This is where that what-if scenario where we're putting the different civilizations on the same continent, like having the Maya and the Huns next to one another. And if they both have horses, who's to say if the Maya were there that they would not have discovered animal husbandry?
Yeah.
Or use them just as effectively. There's no way to know that.
Exactly.
Or look over and
the premise is fantasy in the first place. Yeah.
Like, Fuzzy Fractal, 42, past guest on Polycast, says, neat idea, but balancing would be very challenging.
Yeah.
I think if you approach it like the game already does, for example, with constructing wonders, when you connect marble in Civilization 5, or even particular wonders, whether it was marble or stone in Civilization 4, very specifically defined. If you hook up this, then you get a percentage boost that. So going back to the example of on the coast, if you have a city on the coast, you're going to have particular technologies that are easy enough to identify that it's based on the water because there's some building or some unit or both or some improvement that you're not going to be able to construct that's water-based. So if your civilization has a city there, then you're going to get that particular boost to researching that technology. I wouldn't want it to be a situation where, hey, does that mean that if I have two cities on the coast, then that would double that bonus? No. I don't think we want to get into that necessarily.
Just to get this out of the way, because it's a pet peeve, suggesting things to happen because they happen in history, outside of the context they happen in history, is not historical at all.
Yeah.
You cannot use history as a basis for creating a historical features in a game, just saying.
It's called railroading.
Yes, so, it is, and it's also a historical. America Civ built nukes, therefore we're always going to have America. No.
I remember Civ 1 through 4, each Civ would have its own starting text. Like, they might start with agriculture or fishing or
yeah. It made a big difference, though.
No, I like where Boris is going with the concept and what
Danny
elucidated on.
Sense.
If you were on the coast, building a boat or fishing boats, stuff like that, easier. If you're in the middle of a desert, not easier.
But at the same time, if you're in the middle of that desert, you're probably not going to want to research sailing to begin with anyway, so it balances itself out that way.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there should just be a benefit, because then you can throw benefits to other things. He wants to tie the social policies in as well. So if you start researching honor, then maybe early military texts should be cheaper. Possible, but then you'd have to let liberty and tradition and piety also start getting those other social policies. So then you start getting some overlap in
there. Yeah, you get some overlap, and you'd also have to be really careful with that.
Or how many social policies you need, because if it's just one, like, I'm going to open up social policy trees.
Yeah, open up
the have to be so careful.
Tech bonuses on everything.
You have to be so careful, because if you make certain technologies cheaper to the point where going that social policy allows someone to get there much faster, you get too many instances where, like, someone can honor rush a certain tech and blow you up, or everyone absent that situation will always go liberty because it lets you unlock science techs like 10 turns ahead of everyone else or something. It could get to the point where it's too much, too easily, I think, but it's not a bad concept in theory.
But I would put the concept more like, one, horses should not be hidden on the map. Pretty sure that thing running past you, you've seen that thing at least once. Like, what is that? How do I write it?
I agree with that one.
What is that?
Hey, look, I built a saddle. What do I put it on? Oh, hey, there's something over there. Let's see if this works. If you have horses in your neighborhood, or you have stone, or you have whatever resources, maybe if you have a river that adds cheaper other stuff, that sort of thing, if it's well done, then it would make it cheaper. Or say you built the barracks line, then maybe something along that line that's next in it after building like two or three lets you get a cheaper something. Or say you build a bunch of walls. Maybe that makes tradition cheaper policies. Going tradition gives you cheaper walls. But you can tie that all through. But the original concept, obviously, but different way of doing it, the way Boris was talking about. Very plausible. And that makes it more historically accurate.
Yes, it does, because then it can be in your history, in your Civ's history of that particular game, you decided that, hey, seeing as how I'm already settled on the coast, perhaps we should research something that's to our benefit, which is what was actually done historically, not because, hey, we're the Americans, we're the Mayans, we should totally, like, do this and stuff. It's based on what is going on around you in that particular moment. And hey, you know, if you're a player and you decide it is advantageous to go ahead and research those particular technologies first because it's a bonus, but you decide you want to research something else, that's fine. That's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Just like anything else.
Not everything's a good choice.
And I do like it being expressed as a boost as opposed to, oh, yeah, you settled on a coast, so if you don't research a technology on the coast, then you're going to get a penalty.
No penalty.
For researching something else. Don't, because I could see someone taking that, and I think it's kind of, even if it's just psychological in the sense of give somebody a list of things that they can do as opposed to some things they can't do, it's just perceived nicer. Plus the fact that I think it would actually be easier to balance if it was a boost as opposed to a penalty.
Yeah, but then I would also do stuff like, I've got a spy, or I've got merchant. I go to somebody else's city. I'm in the middle of the desert, but I see you building these wooden things that float on water. Maybe if I hang around, I can see how you build those and get a boost that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Their inherent benefit to trade, which is, you know, interaction between cultures. Oh, I know you're not going to know about it right away because the concept is foreign to you, language barrier, access barrier. But after a certain period of time, you could tie it to Beyond Earth where it's, hey, at the end of this particular trade route's completion, get this particular benefit. Then maybe that benefit then kicks in after the end of a particular trade route comes complete and it's time for renewal. Maybe you could say if you want to continue having that benefit to you're stuck in the middle of the desert, but you want to keep researching technologies that are based on the water, then you better maintain at least one trade route with that civilization that is on the water so you can continue to get that benefit. Yeah, that can work.
Something. But then I'd also probably want a lot of the tech tree to have subtext for each node. So each node is a major area, but then have some of the subtext being things like units or wonders or other things. So for one, you're not researching the wonder tech if somebody else already built the wonder. Or two, you see somebody built the wonder, and if you just want to get a little cheap tech out of the way, then you just go spy on them for a while. But then you could have things like need source of horse to get horseback riding units. And then along the way, you know, you bump up to knights and to lancers and stuff like that. You would actually need a source of horses to research the units related to that. But you could still get like metallurgy. So you know how to work metal, but you just don't really know how to put it on a horse because it doesn't exist. Rather than getting magical, I know how to put stuff on horses because we've never had one. But they're pretty sure this will work.
Yeah, so long as we avoid bottlenecks in tech trees like we would get in Civilization 4, or, hey, this is an absolute tech tree, we research this all the time to get to this, and in this particular order, whatever, kind of like Beyond Earth was trying to go with, then, hey,
yeah,
this just builds on the success of that.
And alternate pathings might be useful. So that, you know, if you're on a map that has absolutely no water on it, then sailing stuff should not really be important, ever. Unlike, you know, being forced to research it after a certain point because, well, the tech tree says so. Mm-hmm. But then you can have multiple paths through it. Like, you can have your seafaring path, your trade path, your construction path, your science path, your religion path, your culture path, your military path. And some of these would overlap with each other.
That sounds good for Civ 6.
Too bad. Can't have it.
Yeah, no.
Yep, don't ever cool. Be a Civ 6. Never.
Never.
By Mandry, and it is research about education through gaming. Basically, two researchers in Stockholm, Department of Computer and System Sciences, doing a study on the educative qualities of commercial computer games. They chose Civ, of course, because it's so educational, and they designed a survey to collect data from some of the chosen games. There's a link to the questionnaire. There is some minor debate in this thread about whether you should click on the link at all, but
there was two other posts. How is that minor debate?
By a minor debate, one person saying that they're not clicking it, and the other person saying it's probably safe.
Yeah.
Minor debate.
It's a Google Doc. It's okay.
Anyway, so it asks your age and gender, degree of education you have, which college discipline you've majored in, leaving some out so that...
Probably leaving a lot out.
So that the data is not very useful because you don't even have an other option. So if you didn't major in natural sciences, engineering and technology, medical and health, social sciences, or humanities, then I guess you just don't click something.
Okay. I guess so. So I'd be in that, but that doesn't click anything.
Yeah, me too.
In here.
Well, actually, I could fake it, but that would be
We all know a thing or two about faking it. So the general gist of the survey is that it's asking about the Civilization series impact on one's interest in history and their effort on learning about history. Although the survey design leaves something to be desired as someone who's had some training in a college discipline, that's not one of the options. that aside, I do agree that Civilization has prompted me, along with other historical-based games, to learn more about history that was not covered in school. Well, it definitely did provide some incentive. The games don't really provide a lot of direct historical stuff. I mean, you have some references there, clearly. You might look something up about some of the unique units or something, but you're not going to learn history start to finish by playing Civilization or any other historical game.
Not start to finish, but I think as you were pointing out, it might give you enough hints that you would go look something up.
Yes.
Give you more of a general awareness of things that were around, and if you're interested, you can go and research more.
Yeah.
It's not a game about teaching history, but it is a game that uses elements from history, which to me personally, it did help me to understand the world better, to look up stuff and read about world leaders that weren't covered in high school. So,
and I would not be surprised if a lot of people have looked up at least some things throughout history as a result of playing the game, just out of curiosity. It definitely has
arguments,
that going for it.
Arguments
I know, I definitely have done that plenty of times.
Yep. Arguments on forums. We would never do something like that. Never.
Why do they get this bonus? Because this happened once.
Yeah. Let's try to keep this a positive discussion.
Okay.
Fine. I positively have some issues with this survey as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Aside from the survey.
I don't want to critique survey design because that's not really the scope of podcast.
But
Dan keeps trying to do it.
We're talking about a survey that's trying to gather information. So, I mean, I like the goal.
Yeah.
Like it's been said, I do like the goal. However, the value of the data that you're likely to get, besides your sample size, is very much dependent on how you structure it in the first place.
Yeah, it's very true.
Now, other than what you said, Phil, I do find this 1-6 scale just kind of
weird.
Yeah.
Unusual. Because normally I think of either like a 1-10 scale, okay, so that it can be, you know, based on like a percentage, like 10, 20, 30. Or like how about a 1-5 scale where you get, you know, the strongly agree, neutral, agree, strongly disagree. But okay, the statements itself, and I do like as compared to the next survey we're going to talk about, you can see everything they're going to ask on one screen. I like that.
All right.
Yeah.
It's one screen. You get a sense of what they're going to ask to help you decide, okay, am I really going to bother? Is there going to be one or two questions that I just don't want to answer, even though, as with any survey, you could completely BS your answers just to screw with people. And we know that people do that. Not that anybody on this panel would do that, but we might as well acknowledge it.
Of course not.
In terms of the statements themselves, I actually don't have a lot of issue with how things are particularly phrased because it's opinion. It's not trying to get at whether or not you're good at the game or how good the game is. It did come up from Delnar Ersky that he didn't like that Civilization was just treated as a general franchise as opposed to being a little bit more specific about which Civ title you're talking about. But I actually like that it's abstracted to the entire Civilization series because sometimes less is more. Like, for example, I learned a lot about history from playing Civilization. Maybe you learn more about history from playing Civilization 3 than Civilization 4. Someone else learned a lot more about playing Civilization 5 instead of Civilization 2. But you both learned a lot about history from playing Civilization. That keeps it simple. Sometimes simple. Simple is good. I don't think this is a particularly deep survey, and you could definitely use it as a springboard for something more specific. But in terms of the statements, I like them. If only some of the other things that we cited, essentially more of the structure rather than the content, was tweaked a little, this would be even better.
Yep.
There is one other thing that's better in the second one than this one. They say we are two researchers at this particular university, but you don't identify exactly who you are or how we could get in contact with you. That would help with the transparency. I mean, I could say I'm a researcher at Stockholm University Department of Computer and System Sciences too, but where's the verification of that?
Please give us your bank number, social security number, applicable, and your home address, just in case.
But then there's the second one as well, Phil. There's actually two.
Yeah, that third link is a different one.
It's actually another. There's actually another survey.
So this one is by Pace Fidel, PhD student at the University of Nottingham. Study Yourself is an online questionnaire about your gaming habits in games like Civilization, Tropico, Europa Universalis, Crusader Kings, Galactic Civilizations, and Democracy. All certainly very similar experiences, I assure you. The whole survey should take about 10 minutes to complete, and as little compensation for time, I'm also having a prize draw. Any data submitted will be strictly for academic purposes, I assure you. Approved by the School of Computer Sciences Ethics Committee and is thus bound by its research ethics guidelines. Wow, they really are a bit more transparent, aren't they?
Or at least
this link actually goes to
Nottingham University?
Yes.
Yes.
So you know it's actually legit.
And how they can be contacted.
Yeah.
And there's even a prize associated with this one. There's an incentive other than, you know, furthering the education.
Although I got to make a funny point. There are a few prerequisites for taking part. Most of it makes sense. Like you have to be 18 or above, or you are playing or have previously played any of like a number of games, the usual strategy type games. But the last bullet point, prerequisite for taking part in this is that you're doing it voluntarily. No one makes you do it.
Actually, my favorite part is the next part, and that you've read the above information.
Well, you'd hope that they've read the above information.
I mean, yes, from an ethical standpoint, you shouldn't force people to take the survey, but I'm not sure that the existence of that there will have a material impact on whether or not someone being forced to take the survey takes it.
Yeah. And how
you
would
have a
you
gun
know?
To my head, I'm going to be clicking on that checkbox if they tell me to click on that checkbox.
Yeah. You can be entered into a prize draw for one of 5 20-pound Amazon vouchers at the end of the survey. Not really sure that's as advantageous to somebody, you know, outside of the United Kingdom as someone in it, but there's something there. Now, some people might say, well, that just diminishes it because then people are just going to participate in the survey for that. They're not really going to take it seriously. I don't know.
But at the same time, you're going to get people who actually enter it for that as well. So
yeah, you attract more people with honey than vinegar. So, hey, yeah. I have no qualms with that. And it does say at the very end of the survey, by the way, if you want to be in the draw, you provide your email address then and only then, or a email address. And you can also check to say it's opt-in to whether or not you want your email address to be included for more surveys in the future. As opposed to opt-out, it's transparent that's what they're looking for, and they give you that. So a little bit more thought went into this, although the context of this survey is different.
The fact that it's online and it's posted in various places means it's a self-selecting group of people who will choose to participate in the survey, and therefore the survey results will be skewed. Beep.
Oh, of course. As with any, yes, absolutely.
Must have that recorded somewhere.
I do like the nature of the first survey, which was to further the knowledge of what motivates players in educational computer games, whereas the context of the second one is politics.
Cool.
To try to get a connection between you play this particular type of game, one or more of these types of games, and then therefore you are interested in politics, yes or no, and then how are you interested in politics, why are you interested, when, where, what is your particular political philosophy. It really starts to get a little too many shades of gray for me.
The existence of shades of grays means that if you don't like them, then you must be a conservative because, mom, you suck.
Well, then. But this is another survey that one of those that you're not going to know all the questions that are asked until you complete. I don't mind it being broken up into a page, but I would like to see, click here to see all the questions that are going to be asked on the survey.
Why?
I don't mind it being broken up multiple pages to make it easier to read, but it would be nice to know exactly what it is that I'm getting into. But that's...
But why?
But why?
Yeah, do you need to read the whole thing before you decide whether or not to take it?
Yeah.
Are you purposely self-selecting based on the potential questions?
Too long, didn't read.
Yep. There's that too.
Well, then.
Are you going to have a bias against surveys that ask you biased questions on purpose to find out whether or not you have the bias in the first place?
Look, the first page may have very well thought out questions, and then the second, third, and fourth pages are complete crap. I don't want to waste my time, so I would like to see the whole thing before I get going. It's like you get handed a worksheet, and it's like, okay, I can look at the entire thing before I start filling it out, so I know what it is that I'm going to have to think about. But if you don't want to do that, then fine. Too long didn't read, you just take it page by page. In terms of the questions themselves, you are required, when you're saying whether or not you play any of these particular games from Civilization right through Europa Universalis, it says game of your choice, and then they ask you for the title. But if you decide, no, there's no other game of choice, you must enter something in that text field. Doesn't necessarily have to be a game. You could type screw you, I guess, if you really wanted to. But you do have to choose that. And it's like, oh, okay. And the thing to me is they could type in there Need for Speed. Okay, but what connection is there to everything else other than the fact that it is also a game? But that's not my biggest gripe. My favorite one is on page 2. What are your main motivations for playing the games in general? Tick any that apply to you. There's other at the very bottom, but then one of the options is, I have nothing else to do. So, but there's a checkbox. So if I have nothing else to do, I guess you could also use any of the other options that they have in there and you can have a look at that. And I like that. Oh. It's like, okay.
People do actually answer that way. Like that's the reason why they play. I don't know if that's really useful to the survey, but I've heard people say it.
What I think is damaging, though, is on the Let's Talk Politics page, have you been engaged into any of the following political activities in the last 12 months? Tick any that apply to you. You could say, why does it have to be 12 months, Dan? Is that what your criticism is? No. Again, it's a checkbox. You can check as many as you want. Second from the bottom. No, I do not follow any aspect of politics and I'm not engaged in any political activity after I checked most every other box above. So now what's the truth?
Well, I think if you get an instance of somebody checking that plus any of the other boxes, you know you kind of have a bum survey, at least.
Yeah.
Ezra's threw this out here. Because it went through the ethics committee, it could be that they're actually testing people's psychology based on their boxes and things and not actually on the content. Because that does happen a lot with stuff where they make you fill out this, but what they're actually testing is your reaction to other things.
Your ability to fill out a form?
Whether or not the form style, whether or not you're a sociopath.
From comments on Reddit, Ms. Romo says, in response to how often do you play these games, tick everyday box, looks wistfully into the distance, questioning the purpose of my life. Well, that's, you know. But I would say to you, when you say you play these games, we are making an inference how long you play each one of those games. So if you played each one of those games for a second, has it really had that much of an impact on your life? I know what he's getting at. And of course, some people on the last page about to what extent do you agree or disagree with the following statements. Some people start questioning. My favorite one is, just as an example, young people today don't have enough respect for traditional values. Well, what's young people? What's traditional values? And see, this is where it starts to break down a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why I like the purpose of the other one more.
It's like a stereotype in question form.
So what I would like to do is I would like to take the content and the purpose of the first one and most of the structure of the second one and merge them together into a hybrid. Can we do that?
We can, but I don't want to do it.
I didn't say we should, but can we?
Yes, it's possible.
May we?
No.
I don't see anything stopping you, Dan.
Oh.
Why was Mewtwo left off the list? Oh, and Command & Conquer. Like, people are actually questioning what the games on the initial list were. Tropico is a little weird in there. A lot of it is more turn-based or tick-based.
Yeah.
Time/tick, but there's no RTS on that list at all.
Yeah, and you would think something like
Red Alert.
Yeah, well, I was thinking more along the lines of Red Alert if you're going to go with this stuff. But what is it? Age of Empires. That's RTS, and that's very, very much historical themed. So.
And at the same time, if you have Tropico in there, why don't you have other like city-type games like City Skylines or SimCity?
Because this was made before City Skylines came out.
I don't know anything about Tropico.
And Tropico
so
is not city building. It's not a SimCity game. It's a be a dictator on a little island and try not to get nuked by Russia or the States.
Ooh, that sounds like fun.
So it's chose for its more political side than the actual...
Yeah. Well, they threw democracy in.
Good point.
Yeah. And is that democracy the board game or democracy the whatever they actually put together on computer game? Because those are two different things.
Or is it the forum game version?
And I think the criticisms for what titles were and were not included, it's a more valid argument for the second survey as opposed to the first one, because they said that they're conducting a study on gaming experiences in video games with varying degrees of political context, and I need your help. Whereas if you go back to the first one where they're focusing on Civilization, they say we're doing a study of educative qualities of commercial computer games, and then Civilization has been chosen because of its educational qualities. You can question some of the statements and how they got to that particular opinion, but at least it's not as vague and seemingly subjective as compared to the second one, what they included on the list, other than, like you said, Matt, they're more turn-based, tick-based, and the fact that they are all series. So all of these that have been chosen, there's at least two titles that you could be referring to.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what they seem to have in common. They're computer games, they're mostly turn-based, and they're all in a series. Okay?
Yep.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Since I have such a massive ego, I'm going to tell you all my story first.
German has a reputation for having really long words, and it's kind of true, although it's not only German. From my perspective, English has a reputation for having really short words. So after days, our lead tester was like, yes, something's up with the siege worms. They wreck our cities left and right. It turned out that for testing purposes, put up the aggressiveness of siege worms, think 1,000% or something, just to try a very specific thing out and had forgotten to put it back. But our QA guys, of course, they play the game a lot. They are pretty good at playing this game. So they're like, well, it's gotten a bit harder, but no, we can't get past 100. Oh, it's dying. So I was like, oh.
I have all these cool words on here like wisdom and scale and confidence, and frankly, I am too old to remember what I said that day, but I'm sure it was really deep.
Record Ace Assorted 2014 and 2015. Phyrexicon 2014 clips, copyright 2K Games. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.